You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
But today we're talking to Zandile Mkhwanazi. She comes from a company called Girl Code. She is the chief executive officer there. But before I spoil it and jinx it, good evening, ma'am.
Good evening, Tapela. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate your time. How was your day?
Very hectic. I was at a conference the whole day, but that's part of being an entrepreneur, networking, meeting people. So, yeah,
it was definitely a very busy day today. Indeed, indeed. You're such a busy, busy. But we appreciate, like I said, the time. Someone said, you know, busy is good, apparently.
Yes, it definitely is, especially as an entrepreneur. If you're not busy, you should be worried.
You should be worried, right? Okay, thank you so much for that. Again, we really, really appreciate you taking us through. Now, this space for me is very interesting. I must say that it's something that I think off the sides, when I look back, I'm like, I should have just gone into this space, right? But, and I'm thinking to myself, yo, programming and coding and all that sounds very, very difficult. And maybe for a lot of us who are not in that space, we're like, yo, how do we even go into that industry and start there? But I think, you know, when you look around, technology is changing a lot of things. But before we get into that, I wanted us to just introduce who Zandile is to our listeners, in case they might not know who Zandile is.
Yeah, thank you for that. So I think maybe just to touch a bit about my background.
Yeah.
You know, as you mentioned, I am one of the co-founders and chief executive officer at Girl Code. But I actually studied at the University of the Witwatersrand, computational and applied mathematics.
Oh, okay.
So it sounds intimidating, but
it is.
Really every time I say that, people are like, what?
It is intimidating, I must tell you.
Yeah, it's really just about, you know, how do you use math in a real world way, right? So building algorithms and all that thing. So if life had gone the way, you know, I had planned, I'd probably be working in corporate in a bank somewhere, creating models and, you know, sort of risk and finance models. But of course, like, entrepreneurship, you know, sort of pulled me. And that's where I landed. But that's a bit about my background and what I studied. I fell in love with technology when I was part of an internship program.
Yeah.
And in that, we were building software specifically for companies. And that's when I realized that, wait a minute, like, you can literally change the world with a piece of code. And so I fell in love with it, decided to just get a job somewhere in a tech company. You know, for goals are the bank and, you know, the bank salary.
Yeah.
That salary is a good salary. But, you know, rather work for a startup and sort of, you know, see what else you could do with technology. So that's how I ended up in this space, essentially.
Oh, beautiful. So the entrepreneurial bug, in a way, found you.
Yes. Yeah, I did not plan to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
It's just something that, you know, once I was working and I started Girl Code part time, you know, we always hearing people like side hustle. Definitely, like, it was my side hustle. Up until a point where it couldn't be a side hustle anymore. And I had to quit my job and basically do it full time.
Oh, I'd love to explore that. I know it's not on the script and my producers will kill me, but I just want to explore that entrepreneurial bug that you mentioned. So it was a side hustle up until a certain point where it couldn't be a side hustle. How long was that period?
So that would be about 3 years.
Yeah.
3 to 4 years doing it as a side hustle. And over that time, right, I was building up a reputation, building up the brand, and companies were starting to want to get involved. After 4 years, I know a lot of people want, like, sort of all things that things are quick. You know, when you see someone succeeding, you think, oh, that happened, you know, within a year or so. But it took time. And honestly, because I really didn't plan on it being a full-time thing, I was patient. So I wasn't in a rush or anything like that. But it got to a point where I was at work, and I was doing Girl Code.
Yeah.
the whole day. So that's when I realized that, okay, this is actually no longer side hustle, because I'm literally doing it every single day. I'm doing it on the weekends. I'm doing it at night. Yes, there's no security in, you know, being an entrepreneur, but you know, you have to make a decision at some point. Do I jump and do this full time, or do I let it go and basically continue with my secure job that I know my salary will come every month with no problem?
I'm hearing two things. The first one that I'm hearing is that it takes time and patience to build a business. So it's not something that happens overnight. Sometimes we look at entrepreneurs like yourself years later and you're like, you know, living that life and all. But we don't realize that, you know, it took time for you guys to actually get to that point. The second point that I'm hearing is it's doable. You can do it.
100%. Like, that is definitely it. There is no overnight success. Overnight success actually takes 10 years, right? And I think that's what especially the youth need to understand. That, you know, I think just the world we're living in now has sort of preconditioned us to instant gratification.
Yes.
That I will be a star tomorrow. I will, you know, it'll take a few weeks and I'll be a millionaire.
Yeah.
And that's part of perhaps the narrative that's put out there. And even entrepreneurs, sometimes we don't talk about the reality that it looks great. I look great on social media, but, you know, when I go back and I look at the balance sheet and the income statement, it's not so great. It's a struggle. So we need to be more honest about what that's that and be like, don't believe everything on social media, right? Don't just look at the stars and be like, wow, this is amazing. I'm posting, flying out every day to Cape Town and all of those things. You don't know the challenges that also go behind that. So,
yeah.
So I think it's a balance that we need to put out there to say that, yes, it can be great, but also, you know, this is a warning. This can also be not so great.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose that's why it talks to a lot of statistics that, you know, say that a lot of the businesses don't even make it past the first year because it's just not an easy thing. But it is worth it at the end of the day, you know, as you build the business and stuff like that. Okay, so thank you so much for that. It was quite an interesting one. We do follow Girl Code, myself for that matter. So to just get to know you and the background and how Girl Code started something that's really interesting for me. Now, I wanted us then to get into this discussion around technology itself. Am I correct to say that, you know, we live in a fast-paced world and technology is obviously playing a very crucial role in how the world changes? So maybe how important is technology today?
Yeah, so definitely I think we can't run away from the fact that like technology is going to be a part of, if not already, a part of every single industry out there. It doesn't even really matter what industry you want to get into. I can guarantee technology is taking over everything. So you can't be afraid of it, right? Even myself, when I was first introduced to the concept of building apps and building websites, I was super excited because I saw the opportunities. And that's how you need to look at it. Like, what opportunities are there for me? You've heard all of these sort of blockchain, metaverse, and all these things, and they sound intimidating, and robots are going to take over our jobs. But I think what we should really be thinking is, how do I best position myself to be the person that supplies that technology? To be the person that builds that technology, right? There's so much opportunity. And I think especially here in South Africa, and Africa in general, like, we are at the right moment in time and have the right skills to say, how do we take ownership of this technology and make it African, and make it South African, and not rely on sort of the Western countries to build it and then just import it. But yeah, it's definitely taking over everything. And it's really not as scary as it sounds. Like, it's just the world that we are living in.
Yeah.
And everybody sort of has to get used to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I must agree. I mean, I think, like I said, there's a particular mining house that a lot of us do know that they're changing how they're mining, and they're using a lot of technology in their mining, and they've built a business case. And we sit there and like, oh, how is this going to affect employment and all that? And you're raising a very important question that, you know, when all of these things are happening, the question that we should be asking ourselves is, how do I best position myself for the changes that we are seeing happening around our industries, around the places where we work and all those sort of stuff? Because being afraid of it, I suppose, is actually working counterproductive to your own self, right? So is it a mindset problem that we have in terms of accepting technological changes, or where is the problem?
I think that's partly the problem, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking that, and I suppose for a lot of it, like, that's why we see in media that technology is going to take over our jobs, instead of saying, no, technology is going to take over manual jobs, right? Things that can be automated. Mm. But we still need people, one, to create that technology. It's not going to create itself.
Mm.
So you need to then think about what are those skills then for you to be able to be part of the teams that are creating the technology.
Mm.
You need to create the software that allows the technology to function. So you should be thinking, well, maybe I should get into software. You know, if you're more of a creative person, there's things like UI and UX, so user interface and user experience, where you design how someone interacts with a piece of technology. So there is a lot of opportunities. And I'll give a practical example.
Yeah.
With my mother, right?
Yeah.
Who, obviously, being an older woman, she's a nurse.
Yeah.
You know, she's been in the profession. She's used to what she's used to.
Yeah.
But they've introduced a robot in the hospital that she works at, basically an operating robot.
Yeah.
Now she has to learn how to assist a doctor in terms of, you know, not necessarily coding, but being able to give the robot instructions.
Ooh.
You know, so that's for her. And she's like, I don't even know how to use a computer. We're telling us about robots now. It's no longer just the doctor saying, give me the scalpel or whatever.
Yeah.
I have to be able to sort of operate this robot and assist the doctor. And that's a real way in which technology is being part of our everyday lives. Now, someone can be scared and say, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to quit my job. Or like she's doing now, she's enrolled into the course. Because, you know, they ask for the first few people that want to sort of be part of the pilot program. Raise up a hand and said, you know what, this robot is not going anywhere. Going to be part of the future. Rather than saying, I don't want to be in it. She's in class, she's learning, they're teaching them how to do basic commands to operate this particular robot in the hospital. So that's practical ways in which, even if you want to be a nurse or a doctor, you are going to encounter technology. You just have to have an open mindset and a growth mindset where you're thinking, I want to be there wherever the future is. You know? And if you start thinking like that, I think we'll definitely see a whole lot of like opportunities opening themselves up. We always talk about the huge unemployment rate in South Africa. I mean, it's quite scary. But on the other hand, I always think, but so many opportunities. There's an abundance of jobs, not just in South Africa, but globally, right? The skills gap is global. So I think I would say that's what we need to start thinking. As especially young people, like if you're young, your mind is so fresh, you can learn new things. You are not constricted, honestly.
Sure, that's beautiful. Now, I'm just thinking about it from an African context point of view. You know, you mentioned that, you know, South Africa is, I suppose, best placed in a way to embrace those sort of challenges. The opportunities that come with technology. In the African market, what does it look like maybe at a high level? Are we still struggling as the entire continent?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think in general, we could do better as a continent, right?
Yeah.
But you've seen, like, Nigerians, like, those guys have embraced technology. They've embraced it. They are building software that is being consumed globally, especially when you look at the fintech space, right?
Yeah.
So payments and, you know, moving of money, they've sort of dominated, and they've sold, you know, technology and software that is now being bought out by the Western companies. And I think we've seen how that's also helping the economies, and that's where we are sort of falling behind. Where, you know, and of course, there's a lot of like socioeconomic issues that go with it, where you can't take a risk because, well, one, you don't have the money, and two, somehow you do have the money, you're thinking, I need to eat, I need to feed my family. I'm not gonna, you know, take chances. But you know, one of the things that I've learned is you have to be able to take risks.
Yeah.
Right? And with great risks comes great rewards.
Great rewards. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think really, you know, if you stick it out, and it's, I know it's sometimes hard to say when all you're thinking about is I need to eat.
Yeah.
I need my family to eat.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are certainly, I think, falling a little behind at South Africa, which is a bit sad because we have the infrastructure, right? We have the capital, believe it or not. We have a lot of money in South Africa.
Okay. That sounds good.
I mean, we really do.
Yeah.
And we have the young people. Like,
yes.
We have a lot of young people. I think we just need to bring all these things together and channel it in a way that will create, you know, new technologies and new innovation. I think that's where the challenge is. How do we bring all of this and just how do we replicate what Nigerians are doing? Because it's not like they have a sort of, you know, better positioned economy in terms of the everyday person, right? They also face similar struggles to us, but those young people are taking chances. So maybe the conversation should be with them and be like, what's making you, you know, be more risk taking as opposed to us being so risk averse? I think that's where the challenge is.
Yeah, you know, no, certainly. I was actually thinking, you know, we never thought we could consult with doctors over virtually, for instance, you know. Now we are. I don't need to go to the doctor's office, you know. So the world is changing, certainly. And we've heard about this thing, the future of the jobs of the future, for instance. So it is a real thing.
Yep, it definitely is. I actually took my son to a doctor just literally 2 weeks ago. And when I got in, there was a screen. I was like, oh. I see a person. I mean, to a degree, there's still that need for like an actual person.
Yes.
But again, this is the future. This is what we need. We have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable and accept that we're not going backwards from here on. So what do you do? You know, do you just buckle up and say, well, you know, I'm not gonna be part of it, or do you take up the opportunity and say, okay, how do I make this future work for me? How do I make it benefit me?
Certainly very, very important. I just want, before I get to some of the comments that are coming here, I just wanted to ask, as GirlCode, you do you know, programs that I suppose help women learn coding and programming, am I correct?
Yes. Yeah. So our whole ethos is really around just empowering young women and girls through technology. So we have programs where we're actually teaching them the skills that they need. And also because, one, specifically because I get this a lot, we have a huge sort of gender skills gap right now in the technology space, which is why we felt we want to focus on getting more women into technology. Like, technology, as we've been saying, is a part of our everyday lives. And so, unfortunately, I'm not comfortable leaving it just to build the technology.
Yeah.
You know, we need women in the room too to say, hold up, no, that's not going to work for us. You know, as women, this is how we are. You can't have a man or just one gender, one race, like, sort of how you're supposed to use something or how it's going to work. You need to be there in the room as well and say, actually, this is how we use this, and this is how we feel it work. So that's actually important for us to focus on women. But I must say that when it comes to our younger demographics, so that's our primary and high school level, we focus on both girls and boys because it's also important for us not to create an imbalance in the future. So we don't want these young, you know, girls and boys thinking, well, where's the future for us? Or get to the future now where women you know, sort of have dominated everything in every industry.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we need boy code.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely.
We don't want that as well.
Yeah. So how do we strike that balance? I think you're raising a very important point. How do you strike that balance? Because I don't think it's only something that, I suppose, in your industry only, but even in other industries, you hear a lot of young men, for instance, saying that young women are taking everything, you know.
Yeah.
There was a certain telecommunications company that had a take a girl child to work type of initiative, and the boy child felt like, but I'm being left behind. And it seems like even in the coding and IT space, now all of a sudden there's girl code, and like you're saying, maybe we might need a boy code at some stage, but how do you strike that balance?
Yeah, and funny enough, I was an ambassador for that program.
Oh, okay, year. That's nice.
I was official.
Look at that, eh?
But yeah, I can tell you. I mean, even they've rethought the whole thing, right? Because we get into a point where those questions are coming up from young boys and young men, and I'm the mother of a boy, by the way. Where it's like, but where does that leave us? Are you saying that you don't belong in this world? So even with them, the relaunch, the whole program, it's not, you know, sort of gender specific. But I think that's the thing that we need to start addressing. Where, yes, we must acknowledge the gap that exists right now, but what can we do to make sure that we don't create a reverse gap in the future?
Okay, let me see if I can get to the comment, the voice note that came through. To our listeners, it is 0734703520, 0734703520. That's certainly where you can talk to us, send us your messages, your comments, or your questions that you might have. So let's hear this one.
Good evening, Thapelo, and to your guest as well. What a wonderful show, and I think that is spot on the money, the conversation that you guys are having regarding technology and how it is basically taking center stage in the business space, in the corporate world, and in all spheres of industry, actually. You know, technology is something that is becoming more and more the focus, and if your business does not include and incorporate technology, you will actually be left behind and you will not be able to adapt. And in fact, your counterparts who are then doing that will be able to have an advantage over you and your business, so you will actually be left behind. So it's really important that, and you know, when you incorporate technology, it actually helps you streamline the business. Besides the fact of the labor argument, it helps streamline the business itself, you know, and it assists. I mean, I remember when I was in the farming space, even at a small scale level, you see how incorporating technology really assists in actually making sure the business is more effective and efficient, and saves money and is able to make more money in turn whilst just incorporating small changes and putting in technology in that. So really kudos to the work that your guest is doing. And I pray that most businesses in Africa take on a positive stance and a positive perspective on technology in their business space.
That was a beautiful comment. I don't know if you did get it, that comment.
Actually, I didn't share it on my phone.
Oh, is it? Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, what I'll do is I'll sort it out. I'll ask the producers to help us there. Maybe we can take a break so that we can sort that one out. And then we'll continue on the conversation. To our listeners, it is 0734703520, 0734703520. That's definitely where you can find us and talk to us. We really appreciate your comments as well. So I'll just take a little bit of a musical break while we try to see if we can sort that one out. Indeed, this is AWR powered by SID Media. That is AWR powered by SID Media. So thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it. I'm just going to play it from my side, Zandile, and I hope that you will be able to hear it. But thank you so much to Derek on that comment.
But in doing that, we'll be able to have an advantage over you and your business, so you will actually be left behind. So it's really important that, and you know, when you incorporate technology,
when you incorporate technology, it actually helps you streamline the business. Besides the fact of the labor argument, it helps to streamline the business itself. And it does this. I mean, I remember when I was in the farming space, even at a small scale level, you see how incorporating technology really assists in actually making sure the business is more effective and efficient and saves money and is able to make more money in turn whilst just incorporating small changes and putting in technology in there. So really kudos to the work that your guest is doing. And I pray that most businesses in Africa take on a positive stance and a positive perspective on technology in their business space.
Did you get that, Zandile?
Yes, and he's absolutely spot on. Technology can really help businesses really grow and accelerate their growth we've never seen before.
Yeah, definitely something that we need to look at. And of course, I do concur with the comment that kudos to the work that you do as a girl code. Very, very important. And thank you so much to Derek there on that comment. So I just wanted us to debunk this little thing, because for a lot of us, this sounds very, very complicated, right? What is coding and what is programming? And is there a difference between the two?
There is a slight difference. So I would say programming is a broader subset of coding. So coding is part of programming, right? So basically, coding just talks about writing a piece of code or language that the computer understands.
Okay.
But programming is specifically building like a piece of software. It's using that code to create the software or create a certain process or, algorithm. But the code is just those commands that a machine can understand. But a lot of the times the words are interchanged and just used as the same thing.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, they're not really different. But coding is just a language, like the language that a machine understands.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. So it's those ones and twos and so that the computer understands what you're saying it must do.
Yeah, 100%, right? So that's talking about binary. But and within programming, there's different languages that you can learn to talk to a machine.
Yeah.
So there's Python, there's Java, and they keep changing. And that's the other thing that, we're saying to people that you can go to university for 4 years learning a specific programming language. And by the time you're done with 4 years, it's irrelevant.
Oh, really?
You're using a whole different language now. Like, you moved on from that. And that's, I think that's what's contributing to the crisis. But also that's where the opportunity is, because more and more companies are realizing that we need programmers now. We need people that know this, and can do the work now as opposed to waiting 4 years. So if you're learning online, if you're upskilling yourself, you can demonstrate that you have the skill and you can build stuff. More and more companies are saying, we don't want, especially we still have a long way to go, but especially in America, where you no longer necessarily need a degree. You can start learning online and in a few months basically get a job.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sure. That would be a huge plus, because we can really bring down this unemployment then in South Africa.
Exactly. And I think the challenge in South Africa is just convincing a lot more of corporate to adopt that methodology, where it's not about 4 years. If someone can demonstrate that in 6 months or in a year, I've learned the skill, I've built stuff with it, essentially that's what you want. You don't really care about the 4 years. But because it's sort of been, the norm for so long, it's hard for companies also to be like, but we want a degree. And why? So technology is changing. What they learned is no longer relevant. So you want someone who's adaptable, who can keep learning and learn on the job, rather than, spending all this time. And I'm not taking away from degree. I spent 5 years.
Yes.
I was all the way to master's level. So I'm not even, saying I'm taking away from the value of a degree. But in this world where this skill is so scarce, so companies are paying so much for the talent that's there, because one, you want to keep that talent, and the talent also, the people know that they're in demand, so they're jumping around to keep increasing their salary.
Yeah.
So the only option is to bring in a whole lot of new people into the ecosystem, like it's to increase the pipeline so that, we're not, because now we have an issue where there's more demand than the supply.
Than the supply.
And so, and we, you know, for those that are economics, you know what that's sort of pricing.
Yeah.
And in this case, paying people, because you're really afraid to lose them, because you can't easily replace them. So there was actually today at the conference that I was a part of, and one of the speakers made the example, we were talking around skills, right?
Yeah.
And she basically challenged everyone in the room, like, let's rethink the whole education model. Like, let's revamp it. Why is it that someone can come from, let's say, matric, right, 18, that's a mature person, for the most part.
Yeah.
18, come out of university, and the norm should be they get a job, right?
Yes.
Especially if you're talking technology.
Yes.
So in that job or these internships, rather than the current model, it's a 20-hour, for example, 20-hour job. And then also, they have 20 hours to learn the theory of what they're doing via NISA, right? Long-distance learning.
Yeah.
So in that same 4 years, you now have people that would have the qualification, but also would have the experience. And that should be the norm for every single person coming out of matric. Can you imagine the kind of workforce we would have if that was the case? Because now people are spending 4 years only to be told, but you don't have experience.
You don't have experience,
you spend 4 years doing something that nobody wants.
Yeah.
So if you're spending 4 years, you know, doing on-the-job work whilst learning it, like, that'll transform the economy. And I think that was brilliant. I was just like, that's what we need. That's the kind of thinking we need.
I feel like we need that in every industry, for that matter, you know, because, you know, you could be studying economics, for instance, like you mentioned, and have the experience by working in an economic firm, for instance. So the knowledge that you're getting at school plus what you're applying there makes you a formidable economist, for instance, 4 years later when you graduate, makes you a formidable software developer 4 years or 5 years later when you you know, when you graduate, because you've got now the paper and the experience as well. So I think that lends us quite beautifully into my next question, which was going to be, is there a business case for coding and programming to be taught to young girls and young men at primary school, tertiary school, for instance?
Yeah, so we've seen globally, right? If you look at countries like Russia, like, you know, a lot of the Asian countries where this is taught from a very, very young age. Especially like mathematics. So they value, you know, math, and every child basically from a young age, there isn't that already sort of societal mindset that says this is difficult. And I think that's part of our problem. As soon as you say math, we're like, you? It has its own people, it's difficult. And so that's become our societal mindset actually in South Africa. But there's countries where that's not how it's perceived. It's just another subject. That's all it is. And you have to learn it. And even how they teach it, you know, it's in a way that even the teachers are not saying this is difficult, or only certain people will excel in this. So part of it is really sort of adopting a new way of educating young people to also say that we can do that. We can, you know, it's not like, and ultimately it doesn't mean you must be a mathematician.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that, you know, you can't be creative. My brother is, you know, in animation.
Yeah.
So, because it's always good when I relate it back to my own family.
Yeah.
And so he draws, right? So
yeah.
He's drawing, animation, all of that. And he just realized that he needs to, so he didn't do that. And he obviously is like, no, it's difficult. But now he realized he needs to know a bit of math. He needs to know geometry. All of these animation, these stuff that he's doing, he actually needs to understand the concept of mathematics to be able to do them. But now that he's doing it in a way that he loves and enjoys, suddenly it's not difficult for him. You know, so I think it's that mindset that it's difficult, it's for certain people, and then you go into it as a child thinking, okay, no, I'm going to fail. As opposed to, oh, no, this is something else I need to learn. How can I learn it in a way that's relatable to me and what I want to do in my life? But I think definitely we've seen those countries that are doing this from a younger age. We've seen the kind of innovation that they can you know, bring out into the world. And if we really want to be competitive globally, we need to start. I think there's a, I'm not sure, in Africa, there's a country that just introduced coding. It could be Kenya.
Yeah.
That just introduced coding to the schooling system.
Oh, nice.
And I know in South Africa, we also, there was a time where, you know, the department talked about that. I don't know if it was ever implemented, but that's something, that's where we need to go, definitely. It needs to be like, you know, just like we've talked about how entrepreneurship needs to be part of it.
Yeah.
Coding and learning technology definitely needs to be part of the schooling system.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose it speaks to exactly what you're saying around, you know, remodeling our education system for us to do that. Because, yes, there is, a, I mean, the moment you start talking about math, science, a lot of us just go into jitters like, yo, this thing, I can't do it. But if we get used to it from a young age and we love it and, you know, it's presented in such a way that it's relatable, maybe a lot of us would not be timid and afraid of maths and wouldn't be afraid of accounting, all these subjects that seemingly require some level of mathematical understanding, or economics and all that. So as soon as we can make these subjects very relatable, so for instance, for without necessarily derailing from the topic, for me, economics is something that I only knew about when I get to varsity. I didn't know that this was a subject and something that you could study. And there's this, I suppose, fear that we have around such subjects that require us to have some sort of mathematics into it. And so maybe that's why we veer from, maybe we need to remodel how we do education. So that's very, very important. My question then was going to be, are governments, especially in the African continent, maybe even the world over, but I think you did touch on it from the world over, but I was thinking the African governments, for that matter, are they supporting the development of this skill in a manner that at least should be the ideal?
Yeah, so I think, well, in the African context, we still have a long way to do, right? But I just found that because it's actually Kenya. So, you know, that have introduced coding as an official subject in the schooling system. We've seen like how Kenya has been really, really driving technology in the country, and they're building their own sort of innovation hub and all of these amazing things. But I think adoption definitely could improve like across the whole continent. It definitely can, you know. The great thing about South Africa, which I said earlier, is we have the resources, we have the infrastructure, we have the people, we have the knowledge. And so what's lacking is just bringing it all together and making it, you know, work in a scalable sense. Like, and not just, even what we do at GoCode, where it's just a few schools here and there, but what about the rest of the country? What about the people that are in deep rural areas? Are you saying that they don't deserve to be part of the fourth industrial revolution that we've been talking about? You know, so there really has to be like, and it can't be done by just government, right?
Yeah,
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I see government as an enabler. They're meant to sort of lay out the policies and the foundation, and then allow us to then, you know, by us, I mean organizations that are on the ground, to go in and deliver. If it means teaching the teachers on scale, so they can go back and teach it to the kids, that's something that the government has capacity to do, to say, part of, you know, if you want to be a teacher, then this is what you also have to learn. You know, if you're going to be, whatever you're teaching, we want you to have the skill set of coding, because you have to teach it using a computer in the future. You have to teach it using whiteboards and all these. That's technology. I think it's a missed opportunity because the world is moving so fast.
Yeah.
Like, technology is changing, and we're moving on to new types of technology now. That if we don't catch up, and sadly, like, I'm not seeing us really catch up fast enough, then we'll be left behind. We'll basically be left to be consumers. And I think everybody is trying to move Africa to being producers, especially when it comes to technology and not just consuming it.
I think it goes back to the comment that we had earlier on from Derek, you know, how technology is very, very important in business, agriculture, whatever business that you are in. It is very, very important. So creating an enabling environment, a bit of a tongue twister there, enabling environment, it's very critical for us to move and I suppose be competitive with the rest of the world in terms of where we are in technology. So I'm thinking and I'm asking myself, how easy is it to start a business in this field? I mean, if we can get the culture of programming, coding, maybe at an earlier age, then people can branch off into starting their own businesses where they create really, really amazing things that make life easier and help us in industry and business and all that. So as someone who is in this space and running her own business, how easy is it to get into the industry from a business point of view?
It's quite an interesting, question and just topic in general, because the one thing that I really must commend government is it's very easy to register a company in South Africa.
Yeah.
It literally takes 15 minutes at most.
I've
registered so many companies.
Yeah.
And I think that's also information that people don't know. And that's part of it. I think government needs a proper marketing machine.
Yes.
There's so many of these things, but people don't know.
Yeah.
And we've seen sort of businesses, and yes, it's a business, you have to take advantage of opportunities where they're there, but businesses where they're charging you 2,000 rand, 2.5, I always see that so forth to register a company. And it literally takes 175 rand.
Yep.
And
yep.
it takes 15 minutes of your time.
Exactly.
So that part of starting the business is super easy. In terms of the technology part, right, I think the challenge that lies is that people don't have the skills to run their own technology company. Or I've seen people approach me where they're like, I have this great idea for an app, but I can't build it myself. I need people to build it. And unfortunately, the people that can build it are in corporate, earning lots of money, and if you want them to take their weekends out to build you something,
they're going to charge you.
Nobody, you know, they themselves, you would think they'd be building their own technology company. You know, but they're not also. One, probably they don't want to run businesses, and two, you know, being busy and trying to do business, it doesn't really work. So that, I think, again, that's the opportunity where, how do you find, you know, or create a marketplace where people can access these skills and say, I have the business acumen. What I want to build is a technology business. I've read up about it. I've learned and maybe I've done an MVP, which is a minimum viable product, using low code or no code. So there's now platforms, you know, where the coding is done for you in the background. You just do sort of the interface, but now you need the actual software developers to take it to the next level, right?
Yeah.
So how do you access that? I get that a lot. Like, where can I find those people? And in South Africa, we haven't unlocked that yet. So I think that's something that could potentially also enable people to start a lot more businesses.
And
you can easily access someone that can build the technology. Because you don't have to be everything. At the beginning, maybe yes, but, you know, if you can get people that are, that know what they're doing, and really that's what you should be doing. They always say don't work in your business, work
on
at
your
business.
Okay.
On your business.
Yeah.
Work on your business, right. So if you're the one who's coding, you're the one who's doing the marketing,
it's not gonna work.
You're the one who's doing finance.
It
probably won't. Too far.
I think we've got a minute or so. Are women involved in this industry, or is there a bit of a vacuum there?
There's a vacuum. There's definitely a whole vacuum, and that's partly, you know, why it all could exist. But even in the entrepreneurial space, right? Actually, my next venture, like I said, I've registered a couple of businesses, is around what we're doing at GoCode, but how do we do it for entrepreneurs? How do we create more technology entrepreneurs, especially women? We've seen that's another gap. I'm also a female entrepreneur in the tech industry, and I've seen that there's just not a lot of us. So for me, that's a business opportunity as well. And I thought about how do I, I've already registered the business and everything, and I want to make sure that we bring in as many women into the space and into these opportunities. Because, like I said, the capital is there. The opportunities are there. It just needs people to just grab them and run with them. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I think we're going to continue this conversation again next week, God willing. You know, and we'll look at some of the projects that Gelcourt is currently involved in. You were mentioning it, and I was very, very excited to unpack those. So I think we'll unpack those as well when we have this conversation again next week. But any last words to our listeners?
My parting words are always, you know, you need to take charge of your own life. Government is not going to do it for you.
Mm.
Your parents are not going to do it for you, or your spouse or your partner. Take charge. There's opportunities. Spend time on, you know, Google and find out where the opportunities lie. Apply and get into those opportunities. You're never too young, too old to learn new skills. So don't be intimidated by all these big technology words. Trust me, like, anyone can learn. And so, you know, find your niche, learn it, and go out there and excel.
Indeed, indeed. Thank you so much, ma'am. Really appreciate the time that you've taken to join us. Some really valuable insights for us. I've learned. I'm not in this space, but I'm thinking I really need to get myself into this space. It is quite an interesting one. Let's face our fears. We might have fears of mad science and all that, but it's about time. Like you said, you're never too late, you know, to get into this field and start learning. But thank you so much, ma'am. I think we're going to do a part two, of course, on this, but really appreciate the time that you've taken to join us this evening.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And thank you to your listeners.
Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.